Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
We're pleased to announce that this season the Spurs Show is sponsored by Greene King Sport, where football is more than a game. Greene King Sport venues are showing every single televised Spurs fixture over the 23-24 season. And with more than 900 sports pubs across the UK, it doesn't matter whether you're based in Tottenham or Tyneside, you can catch every single minute of the action. Keep an eye out during the season for events, offers, content and competitions that put you closer to the action. Welcome to this week's episode of the Spurs Show. It's Mike Lee here. Thank you so much for joining us this week. A packed show this evening. We're going to look back at probably without doubt, the most difficult week that our new coach has had since he's joined. We'll certainly be looking at what's been going on. And then happier times. We're going to look and discuss with two of the authors of the wonderful Spurs Shirt book, which has been updated, ready for Christmas, ready for your stockings. And we're going to talk a bit more about that wonderful book as well. Firstly, joining me tonight, my co-host, Theo Delaney. How are you, Theo?
Well, not bad in the circumstances. Thanks, Mike.
I saw that you were in Suffolk. So did you miss the game, the Wolves game?
No, I watched it. I watched it with
sorry,
my
father-in-law.
Sorry,
so you ruined your holiday. Okay.
Yeah, I watched it with my father-in-law on my iPad.
Right.
Is your father-in-law fan?
Oh, he's an Ipswich fan.
He's Ipswich, okay. Yeah.
And you managed to sort of, did he show any interest in the game? Was he kind of?
Yeah, he's a big football fan. He knows his onions. He's 89. He's been watching football a very long time. He's also he's a lovely man. So he felt awful for me, especially when I leapt to my feet just when the equaliser went in and went, fuck off, fuck this, fuck, and left the room, and then came back and it got worse. And when it got worse, then obviously I just turned the second goal, the whole thing off.
Yeah.
And he looked slightly alarmed, actually. He did look a little bit worried.
He's thinking, what is this man doing with my daughter? Maybe.
Yeah,
I don't
exactly.
know. But it's been a long time, a lot of water under the bridge. I'm sure it's all fine. He's accepted you into the family.
Yes. Despite your
Tourette's.
That's
all fine. Also joining us, I haven't been on the show for a while, but back to obviously talk about Spurs and the book that he's very much part of, Darren Burney. How are you, Darren?
I'm very well, thanks, and thank you for inviting me back onto the show.
Oh, an absolute pleasure. It has been quite a while, hasn't it? For those of you who don't know, Darren has been going to Spurs for as long as I have, really. He was an associate director at Tottenham from 2007 to 10 and still a consultant at the club. What do you consult on at the club? Who do you have to deal with?
I consult on real estate, property activity around the stadium, a number of projects that will hopefully come forward soon.
And there seems to be a lot more going on, isn't there? I kind of read in various newspapers and industry stuff. Can you reveal stuff that's not hush-hush that is happening?
I can mention the projects that have been in the press. I mean, we've put in a planning application for a hotel to sit alongside the stadium. We're going to committee next month, so that's just sort of the one stage of the next development. We've got, obviously, a large area around the stadium complex that will eventually be apartments that we've got planning for. But it's the stadium's really the catalyst for quite a significant regeneration scheme around the stadium. And we've recently had Saraband, which is the Alexander McQueen Foundation's charitable arm. They've taken two of the heritage buildings that the club owns. Right. So lots going on, and all very positive. And as I said, hopefully it'll be part of a stadium, would just be the first part of a major regeneration.
I remember many, many years ago now, there was talk of a hotel. This is before the stadium was built. And I was always perplexed by it. Because, I mean, you know, the area is absolutely up and coming now, mainly because of the regeneration you've discussed. But I remember years ago when it was muted, I just thought it was the most bizarrest thing that you get Tottenham fans from overseas stuck on Tottenham High Road on a Saturday night, which then wasn't the most salubrious of places. I suppose it's sort of changed a bit now, hasn't it, in that respect?
Well, it's changed, and there's the conference and banqueting side now, so you've got people, you know, that if there's a 2 or 3 day conference there, then it's ideal to stay. We've got 2 NFL games contracted for quite a few years ahead yet. So again, you've got all the NFL and the media and the teams, etc., that come with that. So potentially they would book sort of a week or two on either side of the game. So, you know, again, knocking off 3 or 4 weeks. You've got lots of people coming from abroad that, for convenience, you know, they'd want to stay there. Concerts, etc. We've now got more concerts going on non-football related ones. So again, the demographics are changing, and we've actually got planning for a hotel already. We've gone back in planning to for a redesign of the hotel.
Right. Okay. Amazing. And also joining us is Liam Ridley. How are you, Liam?
I'm very well, thank you. You?
I'm really good. Thank you so much for coming on. For those who don't know, Liam is obviously part of the Spurs shirt book as well, and a massive collector of Spurs match-worn shirts, over 700, I believe. What was the first one? I've got to ask you, and why?
So my first shirt from collecting was the one from the year that I was born. So it was a centenary shirt in 1982.
Nice.
And it was a drunken decision with my younger brother. We were very dehydrated one evening, and I turned around to him and said, I'd love a shirt from when I was, from the year I was born. And on an impulse, he went and bought it for me. Right. It turned up a couple of weeks later, and the addiction grew. Put it that way.
How do you verify certain shirts are real? You know, I'm always a bit worried that someone's just going to go down to the local park, rub a bit of mud on it, and go, "Well, there you are, Mark Falco wore that."
Of course, some people do that. People maybe buy a shirt and go and roll around over the local park, and it will be up on eBay as saying that it's Mr. Kane's, possibly, match worn shirt. I mean, there's a lot of tools that are available to you now. Obviously, the imaging and that can, can verify a lot of things, but I suppose from my own personal perspective, it's a bit of a geeky thing. So I'm a bit of a nerd when it comes to it. So, for example, there'll be different things like different materials. There's different weight to shirts. There are different color art numbers, different cuts. So there are a lot of aspects that you learn during the journey of collecting. But ultimately, you've got to have been burnt at some stage. To learn what's right and what's wrong. So that's sort of how the authenticating side of things.
What's the holy grail for you? What's that? What's the shirt that you would do anything to get?
Well, my co-author that is on the podcast actually owns it. Which I'm,
oh really?
I'm devastated. Yes, he does indeed. He does indeed. So I'm a big centenary fan, so the 1982-83 range are the shirts that mean a lot to myself because it was the year that I was born.
Yeah.
And we played a centenary game in April of 1983, and we turn out in yellow.
Oh, yes. I do vaguely remember that. Yes.
Correct. And the yellow shirt, Mr. Burney, he owns the yellow shirt. I think it's the only one that's actually known. There was one that has so-called come out of the woodwork since the first edition of the book, but we haven't actually seen it. So as it stands now, the only visual one that we've seen is in Darren's hands. So my holy grail that my co-author owns. So,
where did you get it from, Darren? And what do you think what's it worth? Let's do a deal here. It's like, you know, it's like multicolored swap shop. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to tell you what my first shirt purchase was, because my first memorabilia collection is about 20,000 items, but up to a few years ago, I didn't actually collect shirts. But I ended up in a Christie's. Christie's used to do their auctions in Glasgow. And I was after, I can't even remember what I was after, but the Graham Roberts UEFA Cup final shirt came up along with a medal. And I was at the auction. I thought, sod it. You know, the price seemed reasonable. I think I paid $900 for the shirt and about $450 for the medal, where it might be the other way around.
That's not crazy, is it?
Well, it's good when you consider prices now. It's good value. So, so that's what got me sort of on the path. I mean, I've got just over 1,000 match worn shirts, Spurs match worn shirts.
Where do you keep them?
That's for me to.
You can't say. I see. Fair enough. There could be some absolute crooks listening to this show. Fair enough. It's a silly question. Right.
Yeah. Same number of England match worn shirts, because we did the England shirt book, which came out end of last year. But the shirt Liam's referring to, I was actually at the game. It was 82-3, played at Eastfield. It was a friendly, Tottenham v Bristol Rovers. And I can't even remember what we played in that day, but I got the chance to buy the 82-3, and I didn't realise at the time how rare it was. I got on a train to Exeter and picked up the shirt and came straight back again.
Wow.
So I also did a trip to Madrid once to pick up the yellow 72 UEFA Cup shirt, and I just flew in and straight back out again. So got lots of those stories on my hunt for the shirts over the years.
That's amazing, because presumably most of those at that time were just tossed away, or players kept it or gave it to mates and...
Yeah, it's only the last few years that the value, I mean, at the moment, if you look at football memorabilia collecting, shirts have absolutely exploded. And, of course, because of the values now, shirts, that's where, I mean, Liam touched on, you know, the counterfeiting. And it's a serious business now. And, unfortunately, that brings with it a lot of fakes in the market. I mean, I've also been caught out years ago buying a fake shirt. So, you know, it's just part and parcel of the collecting world. For me, my holy grail would be probably the Maradona shirt on the test when he came over the test manual. We can't locate that one.
Didn't he give it to someone? Sure, didn't he give it to one of the players? Wasn't there talk of... Oh, no, Clive Allen's got the boot. Clive Allen's got the boot, isn't he, I think?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's got for me, the two probably, well, the three sentimental shirts, the Taxi for Mike on Gareth Bale shirt, that night when he, so I've got that in the collection, and in the collection is the Graham Roberts and the Tony Park shirts from the UEFA Cup final. I've got both the shirts and medals, and the reason that's sentimental is I went to every game home and away then, so just brings back great memories.
Amazing. I mean, assuming now, so let's say there's a Premier League game and there's a squad, how many shirts are kind of made for a match? And can you therefore work out, wait a minute, Liam's got one, they've got one, that one's got one, there can't be another one, it's clearly a fake, there's too many out there. How do you work it out?
Well, at the moment, and from what I understand, is there'll be, obviously, for the whole squad, there'll be two shirts. Match shirts available. Most players will change at halftime, so you know, you can double up. So there's at least 22 there.
Even Ndombele, when he played, would he even bother?
Sorry, who?
Here's a new shirt. It's all right. I'm fine with this one. It's really fine. Honestly, there's nothing on it.
Wow. Yeah, so basically, you know that the whole squad get issued two on a match day, and there's always spares tucked away. There's blood shirts as well.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Well, Theo, do you... sorry that I didn't bring you in, Theo. I went off a tangent there. Anything than discuss the Wolves game. Do you collect anything? What, have you got anything from your...
No, I'm not much of a collector because I think it's one of those things you can accidentally get sucked into. And
John Crace, our mutual friend John Crace.
Yeah,
he went down. He was collected banqueting menus from... Tottenham Cup finals and events. That was his.
That's how he started.
He's got the 1921 menu, isn't he, from the hotel dinner and things like that.
Yeah, and now when he buys, he has to devise ways of it always being whatever he's bought being delivered when his wife's not in, because obviously she's going to.
I do the same on that. I can even. I've got a 1901 menu from Hoban.
No.
We won the 1901.
Wow. John Crace would be absolutely salivating, and not because of what's on the menu. Yeah.
Yeah.
As well as the medal from that game.
Wow. Amazing. Well, that's incredible.
One of the players. Yeah.
That is amazing.
I mean, my collection starts from the first handwritten minutes in 1882.
Wow.
Incredible.
Well, my mate Simon Hanning, who used to do like filming at Tottenham, he has got, because he was there when the old West Ham was being knocked down 82, 83. And he said then he was working at the clubs, what was the then kind of Spurs TV, whatever it was in the 80s. And he said loads of stuff was thrown into the skip. So I don't know if he's got it, but he certainly saw the original contract when Danny Blanchflower signed for the club, things like that, just literally tossed into a skip. Scandalous,
I think I've got that now. You must have
really?
It to me. I've got about 18 contracts around that area.
Wow.
But it's a true story. The contractors dumped a load of papers. I mean, I bought in auction a few years ago the minutes book from, I think, 1880. Liam would probably know better than me on the dates, but
1892, I think it was, when they were actually discussing, weren't they discussing about bribing a referee or something like that, weren't they, in one of the minutes?
Yeah, that's right. The minutes book's about 190 pages, because it takes 11 or 12 seasons. But it's fascinating because... in it, there's a lot of information that we got on some kit history, but it actually records in the minutes about them considering bribing referees.
Wow.
I thought I'd misheard that.
Yeah. No, it's
amazing. If this Spurs museum ever happens, surely you're going to get a call from the club going, Darren, we hear you might have a few items of interest. Would you, I'm sure this conversation's already taken place. Would you, I mean, this stuff has got to be seen somehow. It can't stay in this secret location. Surely you'll let the public see some of this stuff.
Yeah, the conversations have taken place and we're working hard on that. I mean, part of the museum will be recreating the old boardroom from around the 1901 period. Nothing would give me greater pleasure than to see some of the collection go on display, because it's a shame that it's all sort of, kept in storage. But, it's an amazing history. And when you consider sort of the club's 140 years old and, in the sort of 1890s, it's effectively an amateur sort of run club where everybody pays their subscriptions. And it's so far removed from current times. It is fascinating. And, the minutes book I had reproduced and sort of sent it to the club to sort of, for research and things. But it's an amazing history.
Amazing. That's incredible. Well, that's absolutely fascinating. Unfortunately, we've now got to talk about Saturday's game. Wolverhampton Wanderers 2, Tottenham Hotspur 1. I think I'm trying to remember the panel last week, Theo, predictions. I don't think anyone has predicted a defeat.
Everybody predicted a victory.
But we'll start with you, Theo. I mean, it was obviously we knew a lot of players out, a lot of players who've not kicked a ball in anger under Postecoglou had to come in, and it kind of started so well, didn't it? It was an extraordinary start, and after 2 minutes, I don't think many of us thought, we're going to lose this. Did you?
Well, of course not. Yeah, let alone after 93 minutes. is or whatever it was, first goal. I mean, it was a strange game. When you reflect on it, it was absolutely, as we know, it's a great way to win, scoring one or two late goals. Mm. We've done it twice this season. We beat Sheffield United that way. We beat Liverpool that way. Yeah. But equally, it is an absolutely gut-wrenching way to lose, which is why I lost my temper so in such an undignified manner at the end of that game on Saturday. But when you try and reflect on it, I mean, what happens to me, well, I don't know about anyone else, but when that happens, I don't want to know about football for at least 24 hours. I don't want to read any reports. I don't want to hear any post-match interviews or anything like that. I just can't. I have to try and forget football and pretend it doesn't exist. But when you, after you've had about 36, 48 hours, you start to reflect. And really what you've got to remember about football is that there are fine margins and the rubber, the green and stuff. We've had the rubber of the green in previous games and we just didn't get it. We were looking like we were hanging on, and we were doing so with definitely a makeshift side. We definitely, obviously missed Udogie. We massively missed Maddison, I think, in particular. Mm. And although they acquitted themselves very well, I think Dyer and Davis... I mean, Davis really playing out of position. People say he's a centre back. He's not really.
I was surprised he started Davis. I thought the kid from Blackburn was.
Yeah, Phillips. I thought he might start Phillips. But you can see the argument for Davis in as much as he's very, very. He's kind of solid, reliable, and experienced. So you understood that. And to be fair, they played fine. Yeah. Dyer and Davis. Yeah. But I think the real miss was Maddison, because actually we only had about two shots on target in the entire game, which actually is pretty poor for any team in any game. But for us this season, it's unbelievably poor. And it just shows you what an influence Maddison was. The one interesting decision he made, well, there was the Davis decision, which he might have picked Phillips. That didn't really go wrong. But in the middle of the midfield, he picked Maddison, who obviously is a playmaker. He lost Maddison, rather.
Yeah.
And instead of picking Lo Celso, who's probably the nearest thing we've got to that,
yeah,
he picked another. He put Hobier, who is obviously, I thought,
long term listeners know I'm not a fan of Lo Celso, but I thought he was going to start. And as soon as I saw Hobier, I went, "Oh God, where's the creativity coming from?"
Darren,
do you agree with that? Were you sort of when you saw the team sheet, did you kind of think, "Well, fair enough," or did you think it was slightly?
I'm surprised Lo Celso. Yeah, I was surprised Lo Celso wasn't in. But, yeah, it's the fine line of football, because we were a few minutes away from winning that game and grinding out a result, which we never used to do. And, you know, the expectation, I mean, everybody's enjoying the football, Ange football now so much that, you know, up till they equalise, I generally thought we'd hold on and take the points and sit at the top of the table. But, I think the players just sat back, sort of grinding out a 1-0 win, because they probably didn't think Wolves had a couple of goals of all, any goal in them.
They missed some chances, didn't they? They missed a hatful of chances as well.
Yeah,
I mean, the goal, fantastic equalising goal,
it was.
I was doing a similar conversation to what Theo was doing, and I also hate losing, and that spoils your weekend. But the plus side, it's nice to speak to or hear from some of my Arsenal friends who it's been a few months since I last heard from them.
Exactly.
No doubt they'll go quiet in the next month or so again, but nice to know that they're still around.
Liam, what I found quite interesting looking at the game as a whole, and maybe it's because of the personnel, as I said at the top of the show, haven't played under Postecoglou, we kind of reverted to Conte ball. We got the early goal. I thought we'd really go at them. We didn't. We sat back. We soaked up the pressure. We had a couple of attacks on the break. I think Lo Celso had a good chance. You could say it was well saved. I thought we shouldn't go anywhere near at the keeper when you're at that range. And then it went wrong. And as we've said, we didn't concede one. We conceded two. And it did remind me of that Antonio Conte. When you look back at it, and you go, we didn't give much. We didn't show much. And we lost. What's the point of this football? Did you see that at all?
Yeah, I agree. I think for me it highlights how important when everybody's fit, that starting 11, how crucial it is how we play under Ange. Mm. I don't know if the fringe players, if that's maybe the right word to call them, has the same dynamic. So I for me, it was gutting, and I echo what everybody else has said. My TV got a verbal battering after after the second one went in, etc. But I do think it probably highlights maybe a bigger issue, that the depth of what we've got at Tottenham beyond the core 11, maybe 12. You know, are they really up to it? Those fringe players, really, especially how Ange wants to play. Now, I love going to watch Tottenham again, and that's something that I've missed for years. It, going there and enjoying myself, we could probably lose 3-4-1, but I'm actually enjoying the football that we're playing. But to get the most out of Ange plays, I think we lack depth, and I think that's the missing piece of the puzzle, really, with this. So it'd be interesting to see what we do moving forward, really, just as much as what happened against Wolves.
Yeah, Theo, I mean, it was the concern with these players coming in, would they do it? Obviously, some of us hope that, well, in training, he's seen stuff in training, and, you know, you said individually they look good. Obviously, we didn't track the players for the first goal. I didn't think much. The second goal was poor, statuesque, Holbier, the usual thing, ran through the middle. How many times have we seen that goal over the last few years? And I suppose, again, the spotlight falls on Daniel Levy, the January transfer window. Again, we can see with some injuries and suspensions, you can already go, this ain't good enough. Can you then get players in who might know their second string and won't be starting? It's a typical story as Spurs fans we have year on year coming into Christmas and January, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of bad luck, you can't believe it. We've had some breaks, some good breaks, and we were unbeaten after eight games. And then we lose. Not only do we lose on Monday, but we lose all those players in one go. And in particular, the three or four players that are irreplaceable in this squad. So, in other words, the two centre backs, the left back, and the number 10. All gone. Incredible. Yeah. I mean, we'll get the left back back. Udogie will be back next game. Bissouma's out, of course. He will be out now for the Villa game.
He misses a game.
So, I mean,
Udogie's been pulled out of the Italy squad for an injury. We hope it's not a big injury, but should come back. And we've got this little break now anyway.
Yeah, and I think we all knew we had a thin squad, but what we compared to the other main contenders, the other big sides, but what we thought, what mitigated that problem was the fact that we're not in Europe. So they're all playing twice a week, big competitive games twice a week. We're only playing once a week. So maybe we only need half a squad compared to them because we're only playing half the games. But no one, you just can't legislate for that degree of misfortune that we had on Monday. It was just so colossal. I mean, all at once, it was like if we'd lost one of Madison or you know, Van de Ven till January, we would have thought this is a catastrophe. To lose them both and then to lose Romero for three games, Udogie the next game, etc. So a lot of bad luck. You never know at this point. You could say, yeah, well, maybe this will make Levy realise that we do need to dig in and buy some players in January. It doesn't normally work out that way, but certainly the thinness of the squad has been demonstrated. The only other time some of these players played, and Dyer didn't even play then, was the Fulham away game in the Carabao Cup. And we looked decidedly ordinary. I went to that game. Yeah, we looked very, very ordinary.
Awful.
So I think that was more evidence of the second string players not being as good. But of course, by definition, second string players are not as good. It's just that our second string appears to be quite a steep step down compared to, say, Liverpool's or City's, or even dare I say it, the Goons.
Yeah, I mean, Darren, Theo mentioned there that the Maddison being the big miss. You know, what Maddison, you kind of forget, is that he does come deep and pick the ball up and start the moves. And we just didn't have that. It went back to the kind of side passing, backwards, forward, nothing really going on. And you're just sitting there watching, just going, this is going nowhere again. And fairness to Postecoglou, he did come out and say he was disappointed with the intensity after the first goal. He thought second half we did a bit better. And then we kind of, he said, I could see the players were kind of self-preservation. Let's try and hold on to this 1-0, which we know is not his style and way. So kind of nothing worked.
No, but again, as Theo touched on it, you've got a scenario where you've lost players to injury, key players. Mm. You've lost players to suspension. You know, some of these players have been fringe players. Okay, they've got the chance, you know, but whereas, you know, it's not like one player's coming in integrated on the way we've been playing up to the Chelsea game. So Again, I mean, you know, it takes time to adjust to the high intensity game. You know, it's a difficult one because, you know, it, I mean, since I was a kid, all you could hear was Spurs need to buy players. They haven't got a big or good enough squad. But, you know, you've got players that are suspended and coming back for injury. If you go off and buy three or four players, you know, they're still going to come back. It's, I mean, how big a squad, you know, do you need? Yes, we all know we need some quality players there, but equally, you've got to shift players. And if there's no clubs that want these players, then what? You know, it's a bit of a conundrum there. What do you do? You can't just keep stockpiling players. You know, I mean, the next game is, what, the Villa game. So, big game, you know. I would hope on, you know, we'd be back to winning ways. I think the players an extra sort of week, 10 days, you know, with the international break. You know, they're going to, well, they know what's expected of them. I would hope that they step up to the mark and we'll see a really good improved performance and a high intensity performance. But, you know, it's a setback, yes. But, you know, let's face it, would we have taken being in this position at the start of the season? Everybody would. But, you know, and as Liam touched on it, we've got our pride back at Spurs. We're enjoying our football. I mean, you know, I can't wait to go to a game now where I was getting a bit disillusioned under the Conte era. And here you have a manager, a bold manager, plays his way. I mean, I've been around the training ground, the place. I mean, it's a different place from what it was like. And with the Conte regime, like a shadow over the place. And now everybody's pulling in the right direction. It's a great atmosphere. It really is.
Yeah.
So let's not be too despondent.
No. I mean, I was going to say to Liam as well, and Dan touched on it, you know, Liam, I mean, if you'd said at the beginning of this season, after the going into the November international break, Tottenham fourth, only two defeats, what, 2-3 points off top? I mean, you would have thought they were crazy, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I would have done. I completely agree. I think that every supporter, for me, is more looking at the, as cheesy as it sounds, maybe the Tottenham way, in the sense of that you want to go and have value for money, and you want to go there, you want to enjoy yourself, you want to see good football, you want to have a great atmosphere, and ultimately you spend your money to enjoy yourself. And that is certainly back. It's been a long time for me as a fan to witness that, to feel that, to feel the energy within the stadium. I mean, that's ultimately priceless. That's part of the journey in it. And to sit, you're quite right, but in the sense of where we're sitting league-wise, but that energy, that buzz around the place is just as important. So just to, you know, like Darren obviously, he's, you know, goes around the training ground and he sees that and he feels that there, and that is certainly translating to the fans. And that's what I would like. I just want a connection with my club and enjoy watching the football and to relate to them. And I've certainly got that back, 100%.
Absolutely. Well, look, let's go on.
Mike, go on, Dan. Just say, remember, we've only played 10 games.
Yeah.
We've had one bad day at the office against Wolves. The Chelsea game, we're unfortunate. You're not going to win a game with two sending players getting sent off. But the nine players battled away and could have they could have got a draw. And they got a standing ovation by the crowd. Mm-hmm. One thing with Spurs fans is that, you know, when players try and work hard, they'll get a great ovation. So, you know, we played 10 games. Let's judge sort of these players once they've played 20 games. They know the system inside out.
Yeah, totally agree. Well, look, let's go to a quick break. And when we come back, we are going to discuss the beautiful, updated version of the wonderful Tottenham book, Spurs Shirt. Back in a minute.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
And we're back from the break. Don't forget the big news. Now on sale, our Spurs Show Christmas live event, Monday, December the 11th at Dingwalls in Camden. We've done a few shows at Dingwalls. We've had Waddle there, Hoddle. We had Alan Gilzean there. One of the, I think, the first show Gilzean ever did when he came back from not being seen for years. We've had Pat Jennings there. And Monday, December the 11th, myself and Theo will be there. Clive and Paul Allen are our guests. It should be a great night. We've got comedy. We've got music. We've got the VSP Publishing. We'll have a bookshop there. So you can certainly get the book we're discussing in time for Christmas. Come along. It really, really means a lot if you can come along and support the show. Tickets are in the link to the description. I think they're 30 quid each, which is not bad to see, to meet two great Tottenham players. And that also means that anyone who comes along will meet the players. Get something personal. Don't show up with this stack of worn shirts that are going to be flogged on eBay. Just bring a personal item with you to get the guys to sign. Quick photo. Don't talk too long. There'll be a few people behind you. You know, moving along is what I'm trying to say. Moving along. So that's Monday, December the 11th. Next week, next Wednesday, we also have a live show for Spurs Show season ticket holders. We've got Jerry Cox, Martin Lipton, Theo and David Howells will be joining us. And I think there's a couple of tickets for that. They're just 20 quid. Again, I think there should be a link to the description. If not, go to billetto.co.uk. And also we can announce next March the 20th. God, we've been trying to get hold of this man for years. We've done it. We've pulled out the big bucks to get him. March the 20th, Leicester Square Theatre, our night with Paul Gascoigne. That's going to be incredible. And talking about shirts, there are some VVIP. I think he's allowing us to sign 10 things. So we're going to get 10. They won't be match worn. They'll be replica 1990 Holston style shirts that Gazza will sign. There's also an option to just have your photo taken with him, etc., etc. For tickets there, go to Leicester Square Theatre's box office and get the tickets. I think we've sold nearly half of them already, which is extraordinary for something in March. But again, wonderful Christmas gift for the man or woman in your life. What do I get them? You know what? I've got your tickets to come and meet Gazza. That'll be well worth it. So go and check those out there. Right, let's talk about... I mean, I've got the old one here, which I must admit, it's the one Spurs book. Whenever we do these Spurs events with ex-players, it's the one that I get out and get the players to sign. Saw a lot of gaps there. Darren, talk us through... I know you've been on the show before, but for maybe listeners that didn't hear the show from the original time, talk us briefly about how the original book came about. That would be a good way to start, I think.
Well, the original book that's, believe it or not, 5 years old now. It was just basically a couple of us, myself, Neville Evans, a fellow collector, and myself, we wanted to do something that really showcased our collections that we built up. So in the first edition, about 80% of the shirts in there were from our collections. We chose VSP because we think they're the best publishers for sports books in the country. We wanted to do it as an official publication for the club, and that project was born.
And that's the night, because look, we've had many, many authors, many, many people on talk about the books. The great thing about VSP, who, you know, we've been working with for years, they are the official sort of book people of the club, which means you can wander into the Tottenham shop and pick up the book there when it becomes available in the shop, which is nice, isn't it?
Yeah, sure. You know? I mean, this is the latest version.
Right.
It's actually about 80, it's now 408 pages, so it's wow. a bloody ton.
Wow.
So we've added about over 80 pages.
Amazing.
But in that time, I mean, we've obviously got the opening inaugural game at the new stadium. We've got the Champions League final. We have the Carling Cup appearance, final appearance. And we've got this amazing shirt in there. It's the, I'm going to see if you can see it. It's the Harry Kane when he broke the record.
Oh, lovely.
He allowed us to Harry photograph Kane's shirt. But it's what's unique about it is the messages are from literally the whole squad when he broke the record.
Lovely.
And we sort of broke, we've done something quite unique this time because a month later then he broke the England record. So we've included the Harry Kane England record breaking wow. shirt, which again is filled with messages. Two very unique lovely. Shirts.
Amazing.
That Harry allowed me to pick up and photograph. So so we're right up to date. I mean, we also we're working on, well, we have included the Legends numbers, so mm-hmm. we were aware of that, and we sort of nailed that. And it's current to the point that literally shirts from the Australian tour of this season and this season's shirts are all in the book. So it's right up to date. And as I said, it includes some other shirts. I'm sort of hogging the line there. I'll let Liam talk about some of the other shirts included. But so we're sort of, again, very proud of what we've achieved. It's got a recommended retail price of £40.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be available in the Spurs shop this week. And it's also available at shopvisionp.co.uk, which is VSP's own website.
Yes. And I don't know, I mean, because I know it's with Tottenham and all that, but I know, I'm sure VSP have a quiet word and see if we can sell a few copies at the Spurs show event. But I don't know that. I did mention that. It's not official. I don't know. I don't want to get into any trouble. It may or may not. But there'll be many other books there on that night. Liam, what's the oldest Spurs shirt that you have, you track down that's in the book?
The oldest shirt that we've got in the book is around the late 1940s.
Wow.
The thing that was actually in the original in the original book, which is one of the co-authors is jerseys, but because of the kit man that was actually involved at Spurs, and because of his background, basically nothing went to waste. So a lot of the older shirts are incredibly rare because of literally that motto that nothing went to waste. So we know that they were cut up to clean boots or to to clean the floors with, etc.
Unbelievable,
so,
isn't it?
And that's the way that the club operated. So you know, because these jerseys, especially the older ones, are incredibly, incredibly difficult to find. So, you know, myself and Darren are always looking for the older jerseys, but they are very difficult to find.
Well, anyone out there, and we get quite a few listeners. Anyone out there who maybe had a father, an uncle, a great grandfather played for Tottenham, who's sort of gone, maybe listening now, we've got something up the loft. What's this thing in an old bag? What's this sort of old white shirt? You never know. Have you had that before when people have sort of approached you guys and said, oh, I think, some tenuous link. Have you found any old shirts that way?
That actually happened relatively recently. And funny enough, one of the shirts is actually in the book. A bag of shirts was actually found in someone's loft, in a loft clearance.
Wow.
Yes, and in there were four 1967 Spurs shirts, and one of them was only worn between the beginning of 1966 to 1967. But the gentleman that was doing the loft clearance paid the lady £5 to clear the loft, and asked if £5 would be enough to take this bag of Tottenham shirts that the gentleman actually thought were replica shirts.
He thought they were replica shirts.
Funny enough, one of them was actually... Yeah, they thought they were just, you know, something that he could pop on eBay and could possibly worth a £10 each and et cetera. But one of them was, you know, we can actually pinpoint it with the research. So we've got a guy called Tony Seeley who you know supported us doing the research of shirts, and we can specifically pinpoint this to the beginning of 1966. And it was a fascinating find. Absolutely.
Well, those shirts are numbered, so you can work out who wore them, right?
They were numbered. So this particular jersey was worn by Jimmy Robertson.
Right.
There was also a Terry Venables, an Alan Gilzean, and also a big patch shirt. So it didn't have a number on the back. So one of them was
so,
big patch.
So this guy was going to put them on eBay. So how did you hear about them? I mean, how did you get them? And may I ask, sort of,
just for an authentic? No, of course it was more around authenticating them rather than anything else. So, you know, myself and Darren get asked a lot of questions, and 90% of the questions we get asked are, you know, is this genuine? Hmm. And then conversations obviously flow from there, and you know, with our knowledge and you know our you know collective. Experience with regards to our collections and, you know, age from one of the other authors like Shaky, for example, Simon, you know, we can build a profile to identify when the shirt, what, you know, the time period it's from, etc. So those particular jerseys were come out of the woodwork out of a loft clearance in Amazing. Milton Keynes. So there you go.
Theo, what makes me laugh is when Liam's saying that, I'm thinking of like sort of old hieroglyphic sort of carbon dating. And they must be where looking at, was that type of cotton manufactured in that style? I can imagine them all there with the kind of microscopes and, you know, all this going on. It's incredible, isn't it? Absolutely brilliant.
You know? But I mean, you see these beautiful shirts. I mean, there's the Ron Burgess shirt, the one from the 40s. Mm. I'm just looking at the picture now. This book is a phenomenal feat of curation. That's the amazing thing. And you just can't believe how much detail is in here, how many individual shirts are pictured. And what it makes you realise is how utterly beautiful. Obviously, we're incredibly biased. But what a beautiful thing a football shirt can be. And the Tottenham Hotspur shirt.
The lily white shirt, of course.
It's always been a beautiful thing. And, of course, they've got all the other... They've got all the other colours as well because they've got so many change strips and stuff. And there are some brilliant... I mean, the photography, I must say, Doug Cheeseman is the guy who puts these... He's the editorial designer of this book. And he is, time and again, comes up with the goods because every single spread, every single page is a thing of beauty. You know, you can get lost in this for many, many hours. And one of the reasons for that is not just the incredible detail, but it's the beauty of it. You just feel that there's a great feeling of well-being about it. But there's, of course, the infamous 1890 to 96 shirt, which is 100% red. There's not even any white trim or anything on it. And I love some of the quotes that are pulled out here. Here's a quote that's been pulled out. According to early history books, around 1892, the club earned the nickname the Tottenham Reds.
Wow.
Because... Yeah, they wore red all that time, 6 years. I mean, there's loads of early shirts which are really amazing. They really tried a bit of everything. There's a black shirt in 83, 84. There's the famous blue and white halves in 84, 85. There's a yellow, and it's funny, actually, this week of all weeks, there's the golden black bloody shirt, isn't there, from 1896 to 1998, albeit striped. I mean, the sheer amount, as I say, it's a feat of incredible curation, but it's also genuinely a thing of absolute beauty. Every spread is something that makes you feel, you know, you appreciate the aesthetics to the point where you become mildly emotional, I've got to say.
It's true there, but also, you know, again, I'm going more modern era. There's been some awful shirts as well, isn't there?
Yeah.
Absolute,
yeah. Yeah, but
absolute
it's interesting.
Dreck.
But everybody has different opinions on all of those. Some people, some of the most ugly shirts, some people really like. I mean, I like shirts that some people hate. I like the Kappa era, for example.
I don't mind. I don't mind Kappa. I like the Kappas. Some of the pony ones were literally pony.
Everybody's got different tastes, mate. I mean,
exactly.
You know, when the Bash Charrington, the green sort of Champions League shirt came out, I mean, of course, it became probably the most iconic shirt with what happened over in Ajax. But it's interesting here because, I mean, in terms of the quality, what we used on this one, which we didn't have available last time, is what we call a ghost mannequin. So now you can see the labels at the back of the shirt rather than see the mannequin come up from there. And the other thing is the kit manufacturers, I mean, in our case, Nike, are obviously contracted for a number of years. Nike use, I know they use our book for research. And again, they sort of, you know, looking specifically at historical shirts. And, you know, sometimes there's a spin on what they're designing and sort of how it sort of, you know, a similar shirt or the story from years ago. But the other thing is, I mean, you know, on this particular one, sort of where we found sort of areas we wanted to improve in this edition, we've covered a lot more goalkeeper shirts, including the Pat Jennings collection. So we've got all Pat's League Cup shirts. I mean, you know, we've got some amazing sort of and very colourful shirts in there in that section alone now.
Yeah.
Well, Pat was my hero as a kid growing up, and obviously he had his beautiful unveiling in his hometown of Newry last week of his statue, long, long overdue. I spoke to Jerry Armstrong last week. He was there. Not as many Tottenham players managed to get over there. I don't think the weather was great, etc. And obviously Pat was taken ill in the last home game, but he's fine. And the statue is the famous, the way he used to throw the ball out. It's a beautiful thing. And I mean, you know, going off a piece slightly down, is there talk about with the stadium? And I know it's not actually your department, obviously, but sure, there must. And there's been obviously the Ledley Kim mural and Harry Kane. Now there must be talk of certain iconic players having statues in and around that whole sort of Tottenham area. I know there's now plaques around, you know, the Tottenham Walk things that Pete Hayne kind of started. Do you think at some stage we'll see some, you know, Danny Blanchflower and Harry Kane, etc., Jimmy Greaves?
Well, I'm trying to get my statue up there, first of all. it's a difficult one. I haven't been party to any discussions, I have to say. But and again, though, you know, you're catering also for two sort of different clientele. I mean, you know, we reminisce about, I mean, Pat Jennings was my hero. We reminisce about the players from old. But, yeah, you know, you've got all the young kids coming into games now and, you know, do you want to see the more modern players? It's a really difficult one. I'm sure there are specific projects going on. I mean, the legacy numbers are quite a key thing now because, again, every player having their own number, you know. I'm sure there's some things planned that I might know of that ties in with that. So, yeah, I'm sure you'll see sort of more tributes to specific players as time goes by.
Liam, but these legacy numbers, for those people who don't know these things, can you explain the legacy numbers to people out there who might not have a clue what we're talking about?
Well, Darren was a part, if I remember rightly, I think Darren might be better off answering that question because he was a part of the original project, wasn't you, Darren? So you might be better off explaining that a little bit better than myself.
The initial idea came from Steve Jukes, the kit man. And he came up with this idea, wouldn't it be a good idea? And the club sort of bought into that. And then the project sort of gained momentum. So you had various sort of club historians and everybody. I mean, the research, again, took months and months, and it was quite meticulous.
So who's number one?
And we were even...
who would technically be allowed to have number one on the back of their... You know, new
so
Nike
number
shirt.
One is Stanley Briggs.
Stanley Briggs.
Stanley Briggsy. Good old Briggsy. And I take it he was a keeper, and I take it he was a goalkeeper in what 1880 something.
Yeah, you would assume so.
Well,
do they just go alphabetical for the first team?
Actually, you know what? Yeah, those first ones they look a little bit alphabetical, don't they? The first 11 there.
First 11 are alphabetical. Then obviously subs, whoever comes on first gets their number. Again, I believe that two subs come on at the same time making their debuts. Again, it reverts to alphabetical.
Wow. Yeah.
So Stanley was number one.
There are Stanley Briggs, the long forgotten Stanley Briggs, now remembered again.
Yeah.
For those of you into this kind of thing, that's lovely, isn't it? In a way. Which other clubs, what other football clubs, Darren, had already done this legacy? It was something I'd never heard of before.
Well, to my knowledge, I think we are the first league club to do this. I mean, in England do the legacy numbers, and so do the England cricket team. But no, I think we're quite groundbreaking as the first club. So somebody might probably correct me on that. But as far as I know, we were the first. That's why it's quite an exciting project.
So from a money, from a money making aspect for the club, if I'm an idiot and I want to go and get a Giovanni Lo Celso shirt, for example. Could I therefore get Lo Celso with his squad number, and then I'd want his legacy number on it? Would there be a shirt which just, well, we don't, you can have the one with the legacy number or the one without the legacy number? Is that what they're going to do?
I have to be perfectly honest, because I've also just come back in the country. I've been away for a few weeks, so I don't know if the legacy number will actually be sort of, you know, you'll have an option if you're buying the replica shirt in the retail store.
Right, I see.
So, yeah, I wouldn't know, but
it'll get crazy if you can. Can you imagine?
Absolutely. I mean, the other thing is, for a collecting point of view, it's quite a unique thing. And I hope, I mean, no doubt counterfeiters in the Far East will be quickly sort of sourcing the fonts and sort of replicating it. But as I said, it's quite groundbreaking. I know that it was really well received by supporters and the fan base and the public. And, you know, and people probably don't realise the amount of effort by a number of people and historians collating information. It's incredible. Yeah.
It's incredible. I mean, Liam, it's lovely for old players as well, especially if you played like one game for Tottenham. You had like one match, and then all of a sudden you've got a Tottenham legacy number. That's it.
I agree. I'm a massive Spurs fan. I played for the Spurs youth team, etc. And there'd be no, you know, bigger honour than to have a legacy number. I'd have loved one.
Liam, I didn't know this. You've thrown this at me. You've just thrown that in mid-show. what era or what year and any players in that youth team that went on to make it in football?
I was in the same squad or in the same team as Mr. Peter Crouch.
Oh, were you?
Crouch, I was indeed. Yes, I was in the same squad as Peter Crouch.
But not Ledley.
No. Ledley played up a year when I was at the club. So I got into the youth team when I was basically the under 12. So when I was just joining the Associated Schoolboy, you know, piece. And obviously Ledley was, you know, ahead. So I never, unfortunately, got to be in the presence of Ledley or watch him play. I watched him a couple of times, obviously, over in the training ground, etc. I was alongside Mr. Crouch, and I was a youth team player, and then
amazing.
I migrated from Spurs. I mean, that's one of the other reasons why I actually collect is, you know, it's somewhere where I do see it as a bit of a failure, really, where I didn't actually get to play, you know, within my love of this team, really, to be honest with you, you know, for the club. I have great memories for the club, and you know, they looked after me well. And then I jumped ship and went to the really pink and fluffy Millwall. So I was there for a period of time. So
then how far did you progress at Millwall?
I went up to Millwall when I'd done all my apprenticeships. I'd done the YTS there, etc. And then I went over to America, and I come back from America, and the difference within football from the American based game compared to the UK, I wasn't up to the levels when I come back, so I had to get real and you know, get into the big wide world. But no, I had great memories of you know, of being around the club and the old White Hart Lane, the ballpark, and going and seeing Mr. Sugar and opening the gate to make sure Mr. Sugar could bring his Rolls Royce out and stuff like that. So yeah, that was all good fun. So, yeah, I enjoyed myself. Good, amazing. Good times.
That's lovely. What a great story. Fun enough, Crouch, when he was a youth player, used to sit in front of me in the West Stand. It's where the youth players used to sit and watch the games. He was always, I mean, really annoying because I couldn't see the bloody pitch. He was quite tall as a kid. Quite annoying.
Well, we was always rewarded tickets. So if we trained well and played well, we was always rewarded with tickets so we could go and watch the game on a match day. So that's basically how it went. But I had the same coaches, what like so David Howells had, etc. I had a gentleman called Robbie Stepney, and
yes, I remember Robbie Stepney.
Even to this day, how much of an impact that guy had on me as a coach, because I do coaching now. It was phenomenal. He was an absolute credit to the club, and yeah, absolutely top guy. And I think any player that ever got coached by that gentleman was, you know, I've only got good things to say about him. So yeah, he was top draw.
Amazing. Well, before we round off tonight, we'll give the book another plug. A few people have messaged me privately and asked about my Portuguese team that I'm a director of. O Elvas of Alentejo. We had an awful, obviously the Wolves result. The next day we played the bottom team 2 minutes ago and we gave away a penalty and drew 2-2. We're still in the relegation zone. But on November the 26th, for those of you that might have a VPN, we are playing Santa Clara of League 2 in the Portuguese fourth round of the Cup. And it's live on TV in Portugal. So if you do have VPN, Portuguese Channel 11, Sunday 11 a.m, because our floodlights are awful. So we have to play that early. Again, anyone in Spain, Portugal, who goes to Algarve or Lisbon, give me a shout and come and watch a game with me. It would be lovely.
My team's Porto Menens, Mike.
Porto Menens, aren't they in the Algarve, aren't they?
They're in the Algarve, having lived in Porto Mel many years ago. Yes. So,
very nice. Well, I'm near Lisbon now. Lovely. And Elvas is on the Spanish border. Elvas is on the Spanish border. There we are. Well, anyway, so thanks for those. And then at some stage, me and Theo will do a kind of, I don't know who's going to listen, but I'll tell more stories about being director of a Portuguese fourth division football club. It really is another world. We started last month, that's what I said. We must start with our coach every Friday, press conference there. Theo's got a board behind him with faces. We have all the sponsors, and we're going to go live on YouTube. We're going to start doing this. And I went online and there was nothing online. So I called the guy up and said, "What's going on?" He said, "We haven't started yet." "Why not?" "We can't get into the headquarters, it's shut. Someone's run off to get the key." And there we had like press just waiting to get in. That's the kind of level we're dealing with. But there we go. It's things can only get better, hopefully. Darren, quickly remind people of when people can get the updated book. I mean, clearly, even if you bought the original book, there's more than enough to go and get the second edition because there's so much in there.
Yeah, the book's going to be released. I believe it's stocked in the Spurs retail store this week.
Oh, amazing.
You can also buy it, as I said, on Vision Sports Publishing, their website. Yeah. But should be in the shop. And I think we're doing an event coming up, date to be confirmed, early December, where we should have someone. Well, Ledley wrote the forward for the book, so he should come along. But
great.
Yeah, we'll do a sort of an official launch there.
Well, let us know about that, and we'll plug that and let people know. If I presume that will be down the ground, the Spurs shop, you can queue up and buy the book and have probably, presumably have a legend signing.
Yeah,
we're going to
bring some pretty special shirts along. We'll have 8 shirts on display. People can see, so it should be a good event.
Amazing. Well, that's great. Well, look, Darren, thank you so much for coming on the show. Liam, very, very quickly, as your debut, can you remember the first game you saw, your debut, your first game you saw Tottenham Hotspur? Can you remember that? So I've just thrown it at you.
Yeah, I can't remember the date, but I certainly remember my dad taking me in the old West End. It was against West Ham. And he took me down to the front, pressed myself up on a milk crate, if I remember rightly, so I could see my hero, which was Gazza. And he went and stood back and then come and collected me after 90 minutes. But I believe it was West Ham at White Hart Lane. And I believe it was 1989, so I'd have been the age of 7.
89. There we are. What if I knew that before? Can you remember the result?
I want to say 2-1. Do you know what? That's a great question. I need to look that up. I do all this research for certs and can't remember what the result of my first game was.
I don't have another great VSP book, The History of Tottenham with all the things. Don't have it in front of me. How annoying. There we are.
No, sorry.
I'm sure everyone listening home will be looking that up now to see what result. I'm surely we beat them with Gasser there, but you never know.
I was my hero.
Absolutely. Well, come along. March the 20th. Come and meet Gasser at Leicester Square Theatre. That's going to be amazing. There we are. Bring one of your shirts. There we are. Bring your own shirt and get it signed. We'll work that out backstage for you. Don't worry about that.
They're very
peculiar about what you can and cannot sign, but we'll sort that one out. So, Liam, thank you so much for coming along. Darren, thank you. Theo, thank you for coming along. You're obviously doing the live show next Wednesday with David Howells.
Yeah, looking forward to that.
Martin Lipton and Jerry Cox.
Yeah.
And life goals. You've got a couple of Tottenham ones have been on recently, haven't they?
I think. Yeah. I tell you what I've got coming up.
Go on.
Steve Perriman.
Oh, lovely.
The skipper is doing live goals.
Oh, yeah, how lovely.
So I'm very much looking forward to that.
I think that'll be a two-parter somehow.
I think so. I certainly hope so. So I'm really looking forward to that, yeah. But I've had Elton Wellesby this week.
Oh, wow, Elton Wellesby. Yeah.
Tony Incenso last week. So I'm on a real nostalgia trip these last couple of weeks. And they were both absolutely brilliant. Got some amazing stories. And then, got Steve.
And you had John Sopel, who's a Tottenham fan.
John Sopel, that was earlier this year. Big Tottenham fan.
He's coming on one of our December shows.
Yeah,
that'd be great.
He's the real deal. I mean, he really is. He used to be the BBC's political North American correspondent.
That's right, for many years.
And he would fly back from Washington for games.
Wow.
Because he's got it bad.
Well, that'd be amazing. That's fantastic. Yeah. Well, look, thank you so much, everyone. Liam, Darren, Theo, wonderful, wonderful show. Certainly cheered me up after the result of the weekend. Go out and get the brand new updated Spurs shirt book. It is a thing of beauty. And as I said, we'll be back next Wednesday. Until then, come on, you Spurs. If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.